Welcome to the Evaluating Biopharma podcast, where we meet with the top experts in the field to deconstruct challenges and opportunities that they've each experienced in order to provide you with real-world practical advice and knowledge to help in your own work and to see things a little bit differently. I'm your host, Ben Lockwin, and it's my pleasure today to get the chance to meet with Stefan Schmidt, CEO at Avitria AG, and to chat all about strategies and approaches for process intensification. Welcome, Stefan. Thanks for being here.
Good evening, Ben. Thanks for inviting me. It's a pleasure to speak with you about this topic tonight.
And if you wouldn't mind sharing with the audience a brief background on yourself and how you came to find yourself in this particular domain within the industry that you're working in.
Yeah, really good point, because in the end, I was really loving DSPs through all my careers. I was doing quite a lot of chromatography and work with proteins. And in these 25 years, what I've started on, the first part was really discovery. And the last 10, 12 years, I've been doing a lot of manufacturing. And this is where my heart really lies and where my experience comes from. And I think it's nice to sort of touch base with you on really practical examples and practical stuff that I experienced through all my career.
Great. Yeah. So let's get started then. And to set the stage, what I love is that a lot of this expertise that you talk about is not focused in the theoretical domain, but it's all a lot of hands-on stuff. So maybe if we could start off, could you describe for our audience what a life cycle strategy might look like for process intensification?
Right. So life cycle really comes from the approach. You look at the molecule that you want to bring into the clinic, and in the end, of course, there's a patient in the market. And you have to start with it, in principle, already before you enter the clinic. In your CMC strategy, you need to take into account a couple of features of your molecule and a couple of issues and problems you're facing. So this means the different time points in this life cycle are really early clinical supply, then comes the late clinical supply, and then the commercial part. And all three phases, I would say, have different demands on DSP. So this means, if you look at the beginning, early phase, it's really around getting your molecule as fast to the clinic and to the patient as possible. You don't look that much on cost of goods and process optimization. You really want to do it fast. Then the second phase, if you have kind of mastered your early clinical trials and you know, okay, now I need more material and it needs to be a bit better than what I had before, then you think about, okay, how I could improve my process, how could this process get a bit more robust? And towards phase three, where you're really around a lot of patients and you have to deal with manufacturing issues in the scaling up, you have to think about, okay, is this process being able to fit in the facility I'm having, the facility I'm dealing with my kind of subcontractor like a CDMO, or my future facility that I intend to use later on for commercial supply. And then the really hard part comes when you move from clinical to commercial supply, then really cost of goods is an issue. Then you really want to trim down the material cost. You have really the goal to squeeze out every gram that you can make. In the end, it's really a numbers game, and it's really important to sort of get as much as possible of your precious material out of a plant as possible. So you have different goals and different phases. And let's go back to the first clinical phase. I think here it's really around fast and speed. This means you don't optimize your process as much. You really, let's take the example of an antibody. You have typically a protein A column. You have previously had a nice harvest. You get rid of your host cells, some of the host cell proteins. Then you have your antibody covered in the capturing part, and then you need to polish it. And you use typically kind of a platform process. And here the first part comes in where you can already invest a bit, at least, in process intensification. Looking at, for instance, how is your column, your protein A column, behaving? Do I really use it in the best possible way? Meaning, do I really use a complete lifetime of the column? Because usually for clinical phase one, you have one, two, max three batches, and your column will never be used in the number of cycles that you have it bought for. And protein A resin is quite expensive. It's beyond $10,000 per liter. And you really need to be careful how much you're going to spend on that. So you could really look at like a simulated moving bed as a capturing method where you have a really a small column or a couple of small columns. and use the bad capacity to its best. Important is at this point that you really try to find a resin that is working in short residence time and in long residence time to a certain density and to a certain capacity. So really look at a resin that can work in both fields, speed, small columns, and later on in large scale-up columns as well. And then you have kind of a good starting point. You can then use the small columns for your clinical supply, use a lifetime nicely, and then scale it up later. So this is one of the first kind of advices I would give you.
Yeah, and what's interesting is whether we're talking about early, mid-stage, or commercial supply, you've got to ensure that you're being as consistent as possible using scaled up and therefore necessarily different equipment and technologies. How might you do that in such a way that complements your existing platforms or processes that are already in place?
I think it's also a matter of how you set up your CMC strategy and how you describe your process. For instance, if you lock yourself in and describe your process in a way that only describes the dimension of your column, and it's only this dimension that works in your process, then you're kind of locked in. I would always recommend to write about, okay, this is a type of resin, this is a type of residence time, which you can easily scale up. So this is one advice. The other advice would be, if you go back to the protein A resin, you have typically the virus inactivation at low pH. In normal plants, you do this in a vessel. You have the acidic eluate from your protein A column, and then you add, after 1 hour or so, your neutralizing buffer. But instead of doing this in a vessel, you can also do this in an inline virus inactivation. So this means if you describe it in a way that you only look at the time where it's exposed to low pH, you have the freedom later on to sort of do it either inline or in a fixed vessel. So it's really, you have to be smart in how you describe your CMC process. And I think here there's a lot to gain, actually. And a lot of the MSAT people who write this up don't have the experience and don't see the future need to sort of be flexible in the description.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. Is there an optimum way, in your expert opinion, to find a balance between volume and capacity?
Yeah, I think when a process also has certain generations, I think you have the life cycle in terms from clinical to commercial, but even if you look in the commercial phase, even here you have generation of processes. So the first generation that comes into your plant probably has still the same upstream part that you had during the clinical trial phase and doesn't produce such a super high titer. So you can easily deal with the volumes that come out of that process. But usually, the next step is to intensify your upstream part. This means suddenly in your old plant, you have the same plant as before. The vessels haven't changed, but you have higher cell densities. You have higher titers. So your downstream is then faced with, let's say, twice the amount of material coming out from the same upstream plant. This means all the vessels you have designed for your process, and we had the examples of the low pH virus inactivation up to final formulation in ultrafiltration, for instance, they are all underdimensioned. So you have to find a way to still apply your process in this plant without needing to invest a lot of money. So one example I've given you, the inline pH, low pH virus inactivation. The other could be single pass TFF, for instance, where you completely ignore existing vessels by passing through your TFF membrane without any volumetric restrictions. So this would be a nice way of circumventing any facility limitation that you have.
Yeah? Yeah, I like that. So if we look at all this holistically, are there best practices you can share, a couple examples or something with the audience as to how best to put proper support infrastructure in place as you're going along?
Yeah, I think something you will certainly feel quite quickly is that if your process gets intensified, and as I said, it starts usually with upstream intensification and you have the pressure then on downstream, in a linear way, you need more buffer supply. Simple as that. You have larger volumes to handle. The buffers you need is also increasing. Then potentially you have to switch from pre-made buffers that you have in the proper concentration stored next to your skids to a kind of a buffer blending method. You can do then buffer inline dilution, for instance. You can do buffer blending. This is kind of the more complicated step where you mix it on purpose for demand. And this is in principle, a new way of working with your infrastructure, because instead of using huge vessels where you park your buffers in, you use much smaller vessels where you have just the stock solutions in and where you blend it on demand. But of course, you need at least to invest in your pump on blending system. I think this is something you have to add on. Some of the newer Chrome skids can do already some built-in buffer blending, but I usually would recommend to have really a dedicated blending system that supplies your Chrome skids, for instance, with the right pre-made buffer. And here you can really avoid the volumetric restrictions.
Yeah, okay. Now, at the front end of our chat here, you mentioned the idea about commercialization becoming more of a numbers game. So as far as costs are concerned, whether they're internalized or externalized costs, how best do you see determining if or when intensification makes good business sense?
Yeah, I think that the case for intensification is always if you don't have to rebuild your plant, because rebuilding your plant is always downtime. And downtime is super painful. I think every batch you cannot run costs you millions. It's not thousands, it's really millions that lose. Yeah? So this means if you have an intensification strategy, look at what you could do with limiting the downtime you're having. And there will always be some downtime at least, yeah? Because you have to install and qualify and validate your systems that you build in. Coming back to this example of buffer blending, I think this is relatively neutral to your existing facility. I think it's a couple of pipes and a skid usually fits in. And here, I think the downtime might be very low. I think the downtime increases if you have to sort of disrupt your clean room boundaries, meaning if you have to transfer vessels in, and usually then your clean room boundaries are broken. And this is quite a huge effort. So everything that you can do without breaking down your clean room is certainly good and certainly much easier and more cost efficient. It could be in the end that what you could achieve within the limits of an existing clean room is not sufficient. Then you have to really take a good guess what is helping you most. And then it's really you have to model it in the end. I think you have to really do the hard mathematics and count what does it mean, how much do I gain from this, how much does it cost me, and it has to pay off at some point. If you see the lifetime of a blockbuster drug that has a whatever lifetime of 10, 15 years, and would usually mean that it's worth to build a customized facility, then you probably can skip modifying an existing facility, because in the end, the demand is so high that you have to build anyhow a proper purpose designed facility. So I think the difficulty is really in all these cases between, because not every drug is a blockbuster drug. How do you deal with a drug which has not a super high demand, but which would benefit a lot from intensification? So this is probably the more tricky part.
Yeah. So in that context of drugs that may benefit from intensification, do you have any case examples that come to mind where your approaches have helped you to either specifically avoid downtime or rebuilds, or maybe on the flip side, have led to greater efficiency, greater output, and so forth?
Yeah, I think if you look only in downstream, it's probably not an isolated downstream example. I think this usually comes together with an intensification on the upstream part. I think I've seen examples where you move what I mentioned, one of the first examples from a simulated moving bed and small columns with a short column lifetime, or where you use the column lifetime because of the small columns, towards larger columns in the later and commercial stages. This happens quite often, I would say. And I've seen this in my life quite some times now. The other cases where you have moving from vessels to either inline pH or inline SPTFF, this is more rare, I would say, because here people don't feel super comfortable right now, because I think we have not reached the long-lasting history. We have had many examples where you can simply relate to. I think every company or every project that does this does it more or less for the first time, and he will be lacking still the experience to do it more. But I think this will change over time, because as I have said, people like MSAT get more experience how to write proper CMC dossiers to sort of enable the flexibility in adaptation to any plant and so on. I think this will come. This is also an education. This is also why we do these podcasts, to sort of give people idea what you could do and how you could prepare for these things that come up.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, your ability to clearly enunciate, you know, where you've seen challenges, where things could go wrong, how best to go about doing them right, I think is certainly invaluable for the listeners. And so I'd like to say, as we close this, Stefan, thanks for your time today, this evening for you, and for sharing your depth of expertise and great thoughts on this theme. Let's stay in touch and best of luck with everything.
Thank you, Smart. Thank you as well. Ben, was a really pleasant conversation. I hope that our listeners could learn something and feel free to reach out to us to have more questions afterwards. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Please visit www.evaluatingbiopharma.com to access the on-demand video and to download the summary article. You can also access the Evaluating Biopharma content archive, sign up for our newsletter, and register to attend an upcoming Evaluating Biopharma virtual networking event. Feedback or suggestions? We'd love to hear from you.